important when you're trying to get investors or people on your team or within your company or whatever believe in your idea. And this is your this will be your work as designers, to sell your design. And if you can structure your arguments around these things, like what are we doing, why are we doing it like that, why is this approach better than the competition's approach or other things that already exist within the company, you will have a better success rate. If you have a 40-slide PowerPoint with a bunch of numbers and a bunch of boring stuff, you will have less success because people like easy stuff and we like to be entertained. And that's a part of pitching, is to entertain and to have people enjoy themselves and remember why, or remember you and your charisma and why they should like believe in you. So it's just as much about the ideas that is about you. Even though I said to remove the ego from the situation, when you pitch, it's all about you. It's all about the idea, but it's much about how you pitch it. You get what I mean, hopefully. Hopefully you get what I mean. So now we're going to be investors. So all of you, you've heard pitches. There's one rule. You're not allowed to invest in your own idea. That's the only rule. The white coins, as you fit, preferably not opening the coins, but hey, I'm not joking. If you've eaten coins, that's your problem. So the pitches are over here. I'll give you 10 minutes. When we're all done, we're all done. So put your money at the ideas that you want to see live. All coins have the same value.
But can we get it back up, please?
Maybe.
Pitch it again, winner.
To replace that.
Poker. All the coins have the same value, even though they're different.
Very
good. Yeah.
That's very difficult to
Thank you. Okay, cool. So, how do you feel investing in other people's ideas? Someone said this, where?
Just putting your own ideas part of it.
Do you think,
because it's competition.
Do you think your own idea was better than the other ideas?
I'm more invested in it. So, but just from a, like if you were an inventor or an innovator, you probably invest so much of your time and money into your own product. So
yep.
It's nice to see it from the other side where you have to invest in somebody else's ideas.
Yeah. That's important as not as a designer, but as a contributor to your team or to your business or to your whatever, is to help the other ideas flourish, because it's not always your idea that is the best. So it's important to acknowledge what is good in other people's ideas, and that's why we did the design review sort of. That's about acknowledging what is good, what works in this idea, and what does not work in this idea. And there's this is one way of doing it. The dot quoting, this is basically dot quoting, right? But it's a little bit more fun, and it's chocolate, and it's goody. But what happens when you do it like this? There's one bias that can occur. Can anyone think about that?
If there's many at one, I guess you will also think that, okay, that's what
they
want.
That's exactly true. You get groupthink, or you get social confirmation. So those are things to be thoughtful of. If you're doing this kind of stuff, if it's an open vote, everyone can see who voted for what. And especially if you have someone important in the group and you can see him put all his money in one pot, that will highly affect how the people after that person votes. So have you guys heard of hippos? Hippos, not the big animal. So a hippo is something you will encounter a lot. So that's that. This is super dangerous. A hippo. It's the one, it's this, if you bring a CEO or a CTO or someone that outranks everyone into one of these seminars, and you're not mindful of that and you don't level the field, they will highly influence how the outcome is. Because people look up to them. They are the ones that give them the job. They have a status of power and authority. This is like debating with a cop about what's right and wrong. It's highly problematic. You need to remove the status of those people, or you need to design the game, if you will, around that problem. So hippo, remember that. And also be mindful of yourself as someone that has greater experience than you, or that should know more about something states that it is like that. Show critique, like be not skeptical, but be questionative about why, what are the motives from doing this, and is this creating bias or what's happening? So hippos. For this, maybe two guys are hippo. I don't know. Did anyone look at someone else how they voted and vote accordingly? You did it. So what did you vote for?
All of them.
All of them. So you just even the odds. Oh yeah, there were five, and there were five coins. I didn't think about that. So
yeah,
that's also something to think about.
Yeah.
Can you get a level vote or not? So you know the Likert scales. The Likert scale is a scale that goes like from one extreme to another extreme. So it would be like I do this all the time. I do it some of the time. I do it. Average, I do it up below average, or I do it never. That's a Likert scale. So when you're designing a Likert scale, it has a tendency to center. Those people are like average. And this, when you give 5 coins and there are 5 options, you can get that. You can get evenly distributed stuff. So a way of designing around that is either give more coins or less coins that are actually options. So that's a nice nice input or a nice something. It's a something. So who won? I can assess that it's this one that won. So the resting nation, is that correct? The Napier. Is that yours?
Yeah.
Did you vote for her because she's like, so yeah, to then you get the honor of presenting.
Present
yeah.
What?
And you, as investors, get to ask questions. So why they did it?
But
how
really
they arrived.
Maybe we should discuss this later. But why? How you argue when you vote for the himbo?
Yeah.
I don't know. Or the teacher. So.
So
who voted
this
for?
This is where they will tear me apart.
Yeah.
Now they give me all the money. Even.
So who voted for the idea? And who voted for the person?
Idea.
I would like. And then transport it to you.
Do you feel, like, put your idea again, and we'll do a Q&A afterwards.
Right. Time for Q&A. So the idea is that we would like to, should I just do the elevator pitch, or do you want me to do...
Whatever.
Yeah, so it's a car, it's a self-driven car, that gives you the comforts and pleasures of being at home, but it's mainly for commuters.
So, yeah, question in the back.
Yeah. Road safety, like of course, you can't crash, but what if you're late, how would you keep the person inside safe?
Right, so the idea is that for this idea to work, you would need to redo basically all the infrastructure, because you cannot combine self-driven cars with manually driven cars. So it has to be, working in a place where every car is automated. This is to reduce the risk of a traffic accident. And that's why this is not a car that you can choose to drive. It's a self-driven car, so that a person doesn't take over control of that accident. So there are some challenges that we have talked about, which is related to that we need new infrastructure, we need better, something about mapping. I don't remember what all that stuff is, but it's we need to map out the roads very well, so we know exactly what's happening. So yeah, that's one. So the thing is, for accidents not to happen, you have to remove the people. Right? Yeah.
Well, we spoke about this earlier. What about the MIT stuff? Basically, if there is least damage by moving the car, basically it becomes a bomb. Crash instead of killing 6 persons on the side of the road.
And that's why that's why the infrastructure is made only for the cars, because you don't have to make those decisions if you don't mix the people with the infrastructure. Yeah.
More questions? So, yeah.
Can we actually trust the system? Who's responsible for the safety of the system?
So we will.
There is an expert.
Yeah. So it will have to be. I think most of the groundwork would have to be done before the cars actually are implemented in the market. So it's having safe roads that are mapped out accordingly. And then we will have, of course, people to monitor road safety and everything. And that's one way we're thinking in terms of getting support from governments was to offer retraining for people working in other areas of global traffic. to offer their expertise and get more jobs for the maintenance of road safety, for example, bus drivers?
So this is a product for working people. Mm-hmm. Would they be able to afford this car?
Yeah.
Sure.
No way. If you think about this as not just one car, but a whole system of cars, like a new transportation option, we need to have a lot of users. We would have to make this an option that is that can compete with other local transport options and your car.
Two questions. One, so if it's not a traditional car, then how is it powered? And what about potential hacking into the car? Because if it's not driven by people, then it's fully automated, which leaves a lot of room for potential hacking or anything like that.
There's several ways to prevent hacking, which I'm not an expert on. but it is something that is increasingly discussed, especially like someone created a pacemaker, you know, that future parking, that could be hacked. And the idea is, why would you do that? Why is it necessary to create something that people could get access to? So it would have to be, So security is of course a very major thing too. But there are several things we can do to prevent it. And it's good that we talk about it now and not later. And the other question was?
How is the car powered? If it's fully automated or driving, is it gas, electric?
Well, I would think that maybe it's, in an ideal world, of course, it has to be renewable energy. But it could also be, since we are redoing the whole infrastructure thing, the actual road could be the thing that powers the car.
I have a question. Would you actually drive the board? Would you? Is this really a car, or is it more like a sleeping hotel?
It's
or
like a
massage institute?
It's like a massage institute / transportation pod. It's not supposed to be a car. We don't need to drive. The car can drive us. Yeah.
So if you need to redo the infrastructure, how is this car steered to train travel?
First of all, train travel, we can just think about how it's like today. It's a train is transporting a lot of people from a place they do not live to a place they're not going.
You know
what I mean?
So you would have to rebuild the infrastructure to every single house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe we need more achievements.
So that's why when you create an elevator pitch, spend time on it. Like you had 20 minutes. That's not a long time to create one sentence that builds your entire company. But you can iterate it. You can user test it. Like I said in the prototyping, this is basically the first step of your business plan. So th- this is the prototype of your business plan. And you mentioned in your pitch that your competition is Tesla. I would never invest in your company when I knew you were going up against Tesla. That, this is why I personally didn't invest in you.
Yeah.
Because they are a giant. And you're, I like your idea, but they can do it. And they can do it faster because they have the infrastructure. They have the autonomous cars. And they have all this stuff. So these are things to think about when you create your pitch and when you try to figure out all the bits and bobs of your system and your business plan and everything. Is how would you approach this? And what is the minimum viable product was mentioned last time. So this is the minimum viable product of your business plan that you can actually bring to investors and see, is this worthy of someone's time and money, or is this just a dream? And then you can iterate it. Maybe you're competing against trades. Maybe that's the thing, or maybe something else. I don't know. But it was, did you find it interesting, or did you find it weird? Or interesting. Would you do this, would you do this again?
Would I keep chocolate money to other people?
Yeah. So you asked about do you get it back? I think you know who's getting what. So you get the money that you deserve from your investment. So the teams get the coins and Tuba gets a lot of coins. So at your own leisure. So that was basically it. We talked a little bit about how to go from A to B and how this works. So I want you to think a little bit about what surprised you today and what would you maybe not do again and how would you do it differently if you were to create this thing. So take a couple of minutes, take like 5 minutes. And think, I can put a couple of questions on the board that can help you sort of kickstart this. And then we'll go around and see if anyone has something they want to discuss. Is that okay? Is that a good way of doing it?
And you can discuss in groups?
Yes,
as well.
I have the thingamajig somewhere. So these are unfortunately all in English, but these ones are good. So these are unfortunately all in English, not all in Norwegian. But the first one is like, what surprised you? And then it's, what's the most important thing you learned today? What do you wish you learned more about today? Like, what do you need more context to understand? And what part of the individual workshops do you feel you performed the best, that you were like tapped into the most, or that you as a resource was mostly used goodly? That's not a word. And so on. So just take 5 minutes and think about what we did today and how you would do differently if you did it, what you learned, what is applicable to the projects you're working on now, what do you want more of, what do you want less
of.
application, product. So there's a lot about like your business plan, your competition, and all this sort of things. But I really enjoy this kind of process where you go from nothing to something. So it's cool that you agree, or at least you personally agree.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
I hope I
agree with you.
Yeah, we
always have that. So, did you find anything interesting, or what do you think you need more about? What's on your mind?
I think it's a good practice, since in these situations are not something we can meet in everyday life. So that gives us a chance to analyze the different kinds of situation and we need some solutions.
Yeah. Tuva will have Tuva speak a little bit about how this works in actual context of solving problems. So she will talk about that in like, I don't know, 2-3 minutes. Last week, do you have any like ideas? When were you created? Was it when I mentioned Governator? Is that your part?
I think we were created during the Post-it Note scan for our poster. One thing we kind of ended up thinking about was, since the way we did our Post-it Notes is kind of just like, okay, randomly put them together, see what happens. We kind of thought that maybe in the real world, that might be a good way to kind of have an icebreaker to start things. Just everyone put stuff down, see what happens, have your laughs, and then kind of be like, oh, maybe this would work with this and this one, and kind of use that as a way to get into it.
Yep. So when you do these kinds of sessions, if you have people that never met each other, it's really important to have an icebreaker. And the Post-it poker is a nice icebreaker because it's low cost, medium high yield, and you get like your creative urge started. You can either do it like we did today, where you limit like say D&D post-its, or you can start off by having people just chalk out post-its and then have them do as many rounds as they can. So it's, if people don't know each other, like it gives them. That's also why like these split situations of people. It gives you a context to your group, like what's going on in their life, how does that relate to my life? Do we have something in common? So it gives what's the term, rapport. Yeah. So it builds a common ground for you to know your teammates and understand where they're coming from. That's also why we did the introduction to this, the start of the class, so I can understand who you were. So you can understand the class. And that's also part of why I wanted you to work in groups that you didn't know. Because when you come into like an office space or something, you will more than often be put in a group of people that you don't know, or that you actually hate, or that you feel are total nitwits. So it's important to be able to see the value in your team, regardless of you thinking them personally being in. They might be really skilled at something, or they might be really creative at something. So it's a nice, like, low bar entry point for creative work. But it can be, like, difficult if you don't have a frame for it, if you don't have a target or a specific case you're trying to solve. The frame can be, like you say, it's all over the place. You don't know what you're doing. And also, it's easier to
And that said, once we get it down, then we have a lot of fun, you know, seeing the boundaries, seeing the possibilities in the boundaries, within the boundaries.
That's the game that you mentioned, fun. Because games, what are they? Fun, except political games, I love games. Tuva, should we take like a 4-minute break?
Sure.
And then Tuva will, so you asked about how it is to be an intern. Tuva was an intern for Accenture. She goes to the master's to be here, second year. She also works in her own company. So I'll let her talk a little bit about how this works in context. And please ask her every single question you have. Me personally, I have to leave at 3 o'clock. I'm not sure about Tuva.
I'm student, so I have all the time in the world. Not gonna be here.
Yeah.
so use them at your leisure. I am here until 3 o'clock, so if you have something you're wondering about, please ask me on the break or send ask on the Facebook page thing we do, and there. So cool. So break until like half-ish, and then Tiago will take the show. And also collect your coins and eat them. I ate some of them, so you might not have as many coins that you started with.
Jag sa som kan vara lite fint att titta på det. När använder du din metod? Alltså vilken metod fungerar? Om man tänker målgruppen. Vi diskuterade lite här nivån på det, för att när man inte ens är en design research person, du ska jobba med den lokala cykelplayerna eller hjälpplayerna eller något sånt, får du, eller du ska i businessrummet, är det någonting som är liksom, jag förstår att den är icebreaker, kan man använda överallt, men jag vet inte om det är en relevant fråga nu, men jag kan tänka mig.
Bara texten har lite mer för att det är en fri gammal.
design. You know, I don't know. Would I? Smileys on needs, benefits, or technology. Ish. Or to prefer, I saw the Microsoft, for example. Så er det jo sånn, vi har denne teknologien, hva den kan brukes til? Å ja, kanskje du vil ha den. Mens Apple, når de kom, så sa du har dette problemet. Du kan løse det på denne måten, og hei, vi har teknologien som lar deg løse det. Så det den omvendt
veien
å tenke på den.
Okay, yeah? Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah, no. No! Okay, so I haven't really prepared anything, but I guess that you're wondering the difference between doing interaction design as a master course and working in the industry. Is that about right? So I had the exact same feeling 6 months ago when I got an internship with Accenture this summer. And I was very interested to see if it would be like I hoped it would be. And the answer really is that it depends on what type of project you're on and where you work. I was lucky because right now in Accenture, they have a focus on what they call, you probably heard it, design thinking. You know, that is a way of working that describes the design process. So you would start by gathering insights, then you would, you know, so it's like insight phase, discover phase, testing, and then implementation, and then it would go in iterations. So when I was doing it this summer, I was lucky to be in the branch of Accenture Digital, who are mainly interaction designers, people in marketing, but also people in analytics. So everyone there was familiar with the design thinking as a mythology. But in my group, I was working, we were 40 interns from different schools around Norway, and we were all divided into different projects depending on, they had, I think it was about 11 projects that they needed us to work on. And I was in a group of six, and I was the only designer, the only one with any technical background or any type of design background, and the rest of the group were in economics. So it's civil economics, industrial economics, and marketing. So very, very different perspectives, and that's what it's going to be. You will be working in multidisciplinary teams, and sometimes you might be the only designer, which can sometimes be a challenge. But what we did was that we used the sort of things that we've done today, the workshops as a team to think about, you know, to develop our ideas. Because the project that we got, I worked on, we developed a chatbot solution in public service. And no one really knew if that would work. So we had some tools to work with and some ideas from the project manager. But in reality, it was up to us to find out what we could do. And I started off, you know, let's do a workshop, let's do some game storming, put out all the post-its. And everyone was very, it's a waste of time. Oh, we really need to do work. We shouldn't do this. We need to do work. And luckily, my project manager said, no, you should really do some workshops now, some types of game storming, whatever. So they were kind of forced to do it with me. But when they saw the benefits from doing it, they loved it. So every week I was in charge of a workshop, either once or twice a week, just to get us away from all the details and every type of route that we've stuck on and start thinking about new ideas and new ways of doing things. So I had my internship was very much like I hope it would be, because I worked as an interaction and service designer, so that was my role. As being the only one with experience in design thinking, I was able to control a bit more of the process and how we laid out the running of the whole project. And I was able to do new things, stuff that I haven't done before. Work on, for example, we had to do create a business case, something we had to think about broader things than just design. But then I was able to work on the interface design. I worked inside the solution. So I designed, for example, in chatbots, you have to do a conversation design, where you basically design a whole conversation. And I was able to make sure early on that we were influenced by users when we did that, so that we based the conversation design on how users would interact with this chatbot. So that was one of the roles that you really have to keep in mind, that as an interaction designer, it's your job to make sure that you are user-focused and that you think about your users, and you're the person that says, no, we need to go out now and test it. And that was something new for the other people in the team, that they haven't worked with users, they haven't thought about because when they talk about users, they're usually customers or target groups, and not an actual physical being that is going to use a product. So yeah, I've been speaking a lot. Any questions? I guess, yeah.
Okay, yeah, talking about user testing, right? Let's say for our project now we have a black wall. So when you do the user testing, you just simply go to engineering campus, you meet some students there for user testing.
Mm-hmm.
And then how for you in the real industry that you make the user testing? How do you do it?
Well, sometimes it can be, on some projects it's not prioritized It's increasingly more and more, but one example is that we were three groups last summer that worked on chatbots for three different clients in three different domains. And we used a user-centered design thinking approach, while the others did not. And the output of what we delivered versus what the others delivered were very, very different. So ours performed better than those who hadn't had any contact with users. And we were able to influence them to do user testing in the last week because they saw how much, because we were working with the same tools and they could see that ours performed better than theirs did. So that's when they adopted it. So you really need to sell it and make a point of it. But sometimes, so we didn't really have, it wasn't like the users were there that the client gave us a team of people to work with. We had to go out there, we had to talk and find relevant users. And also early in the process, it's difficult to select the right users when you're in an early prototyping stage. So we used people around us that were working on the same project but in different areas just to see how they would interact with it. We were lucky to work with a user group that was quite easy to find. So it was easy for us to recruit someone to do simple user tests. But if you're working with more like niche user groups, it's a demanding process, especially if you're working utsatte grupper. Patients, marginalized groups, patients, children, that kind of thing. So, but it's something to keep in mind that when the other groups talked about it, they hadn't, their project managers were not in the same branch as us. They worked in operations and financial services. So they hadn't really given that much thought that they need to user test this. They thought, oh, we know what the product is. We know what the chatbot should do. We have all this information that we can use. But what happened was that although you have all this information, you know the products you're selling, you might not know how a users would ask a question. You don't know what the users are wondering about. So it shows the importance of starting early on with the users. Yeah. I don't know if I answered your questions. We did, yeah. We actually brought our prototype and we were working in the middle of Oslo. So our user group were young parents or parents to be. So we just assumed that someone would be like in the right age of maybe becoming a parent. So we would just grab them and, hey, you want to test the prototype? And then we gave them the prototype. We had some scenarios, questions that we had prepared, and we asked them to perform tasks. And then all the data was then logged. So we were able to get all the information from the prototype directly so we could analyze them at a later point, but we also took notes and we interviewed. So that's what we did. So yeah, it's scary, but it's fun. And people do like it if you have something like, hey, you want to try this really cool new thing? And people will be like, yeah, sure. And some people will not, you know, participate, but then you just move on. Yeah, you have to approach people. We were on the street. Yeah. Our project manager, he was very much like, oh yeah, that's going to be so cool. I was just thinking of sending you out. And it was a student. So we were interns. We were summer interns. So of course they want to make it fun. And that was one way he thought it would be fun, since we wouldn't be able to access users from the client or within like the project sphere. We kind of had to use what we got. And we had people on the street. So we used them. And then we had some more formal ones later on where we recruited a very small participant group. I think we had about five, where we did like very long formal user testing that was about 30 minutes per person. But that was at a later stage. So the first one was just to see how it would perform, because when you're working with a solution, you get so familiarized with everything that you know how it works. You know, especially with a chatbot, you know the questions it will answer until you bring it to a user and then they ask something that's like, oh yeah, it'll answer it, and then it doesn't because they rephrase the question in a way that you didn't think they would, right? So it's, yeah. We had a toolkit that was delivered by a supplier of chatbot, AI technology. So they provide a builder and an interface that you can use to build and train the chatbot, and that also stores data. So you can monitor. So every time a new user uses it, that gets saved, and then you can access the both the chat log but also the data in terms of percentage, how well did it, because there are some percentages in terms of how well this is about chatbots, but when they predict what the user is asking, and to give an answer it has to be above 60% for it to 60% certainty for it to give that reply. So it gives you how well it responded, and then we could go in and change it depending on how poorly or well it performed. So,
could we try out that technology or that platform, that tool again?
No, not that one.
No.
But you can access other ones online. So there are several companies, yeah. Boost?
No.
Vix?
Yeah. Which is one of these clients.
Yeah.
So you can play around with it. And there's also a company called Vivo, where they built like a layer on top of Boost, so you can actually check it.
Yeah. So we, yeah. And then we worked with also another Norwegian startup because there aren't that many apart from then what's it called, Mito?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mito, and then we worked with Boost, which are the only ones providing a Norwegian spoken chatbot. But if you want to work with an English one, there are hundreds online that you can use that offers builders and like ways to create one. So it's a nice way to explore it. Yeah. So that's my internship. It was a lot of fun. I think that's the main part, that we did have a lot of fun. It's very creative. Since I'm the designer, I of course then designed the interface. We're in charge of user testing, both planning it and then collecting the data from it, and then gave ways in which to then use that data to improve. Improve the chatbot, and I think it was the design thinking in itself, so the process that since I was the only one with experience in it, I was able to kind of control. Yeah. So we all participated in starting to train and build the chatbot, because we had to build it from scratch, because we were implementing it in a domain where the tools that were given, the toolkit from Boost, doesn't support the type of domain that we were working in. So we couldn't use any of their pre-packages that you could purchase as a company. So we had to build it from scratch. So the first thing that we did was that we analyzed all existing channels. So that's what, so we divided ourselves up in terms of what we were good at. So we had two very analytical guys that are both in civil economics and in industrial economics, and they did a very thorough content analysis on existing channels. So that would be any other communication, customer service channel, We did a lot of analysis at first and research. I created personas where we did another exercise from GameStorm, which is called empathy mapping. So we used the empathy mapping to really sort and analyze the data that we gather from user research to build personas of for our group. So that was one bit, and then we had. We were also, and then of course we have to sell it. So every 2 weeks we had to do a presentation for a internal team in Accenture, where we had to tell them what we have done, how we're doing, and what we plan to do, and how we plan to do it. So they would monitor us every 2 weeks to make sure that we were on track, that we weren't, that we were providing a product that the client would be satisfied with, and that we would be able to deliver it on time. So that was the consultancy part of it. So we had to pretend that in many ways that they were the client. So we did most of our pitching, and selling, and everything towards them. Yeah. Very much. That is very important. Well, it's important because in the field of chatbots that we were working in, they're called virtual assistants, which means that they should reflect the brand. So we did some thorough analysis on the brand image, their values, and tone of voice, style guides, everything, to make sure that that was reflected in the persona that we built. I did most of that, so we created kind of a persona for the chatbot as well, and then I created several designs for how it would look. That was then used as a sort of a fun competition within the whole project, with all the departments where everyone can vote for the ones that they like the best and the names and stuff like that. So we tried to treat it like a fun experience for not just our little team, but it tried to include the whole building, really. So there's several ways of doing it. And for those who don't know, so this is basically what I'm discussing now, and now is my part of my master thesis, because the biggest problem we had is that there are no real framework for how to do this. So we did a lot of failing, and we did a lot of learning, and we ended up delivering something that was pretty good. And that's what design is all about, you know? We don't know how to solve it, but we think we know. We try it, we fail, we try it again, we succeed, and then.
But as you are the only one designer in the team, do you execute the interface, the complete interface by yourself only?
Yeah.
So don't know.
So we had one project manager, and then we had two like guidance people. And one of them were an interaction design manager. So he helped me. I pitched my ideas to him, and then he helped me with the design part. So, which made my role a bit different from the others. So, because they were more in management consulting, business consulting, while I was more in the technology execution. Yeah, so it were different roles, but it worked really well because as an interaction designer, you have to understand people, and you have to be able to adapt to different domains. And working in a multidisciplinary team that has other specialities, it was really helpful for me to do my job, especially because we were able to do such a good, thorough analysis and market research beforehand. So we had a very clear idea of what this needed to be before we even began working on the prototype, which is very important. Hey. So it's many different ways that you can work as an interaction designer. Like Sebastian said, I also have a project-related freelance job on the side, where I do very different types of work. But that is also because of my background, because I did a bachelor in media production design, and so I have like a graphic design, web design background as well. And I'm working in branding, so I think it's a creative agency that specializes in branding, so branding design, brand development, and I use a lot of that when I work as an interaction designer. Because you need to understand the users. But if you work as a consultant, you have a client, and the client has clients, and the clients have users. So you kind of have to think about all the people that will be affected. So you really need to understand all the people, all the stakeholders, which we can. Fun. Yeah.
I know that you also have a media and communication studies background.
I do.
How do you, I mean, that's a broader take on looking at the, not only the technical system or the individual users. How do you think, are you using that in your...
All the time,
yeah.
I would say. So in my bachelor, I had a lot of theoretical courses that went into especially thinking about more of the sociological and philosophical sides, ethics of technology, but also in terms of how the digital sphere works. So I learned a lot about my major kind of when I did my bachelor was in advertising, marketing, analyzing type of, it's hard to explain, but it's basically taking anything in society. So it could be, a commercial, a poster, a political figure, and then pick them apart. Try to figure out what are the components that makes this work. Why does this poster meet their target audience? Why does it evoke feelings in people? Trying to understand, pick everything apart. So it's the different side of design. So when we create a design, we work from the bottom up, but this was taking it from the top down. So we tried to pick it apart. And it's a very valuable thing to think about, but also being aware of people. I think especially when we work with health technology, it's very much about the technology, the bits and the buts, but you forget about the people, for example, people, nurses, the culture, the environment, which also affects how you develop things. So it's a very valuable thing to know, to be able to see different sides of technology apart from just the production of it, but also how it will affect environments, people, and yeah. So I did my bachelor thesis. I actually wrote about zombies, which is really cool. I wrote about how zombie as a figure in popular culture influences the way we advertise products to people. That was my bachelor thesis. So if you want to know, I'll let you know. But it is. If you go to my LinkedIn, my bachelor thesis is on my LinkedIn. Trying to get the word out there. Zombies are cool, and they're a very, very powerful marketing tool, actually.
Pretty soon Halloween.
Yes. So if you want to prepare for Halloween, you can. It's not that scary. It's yeah.
Thank you very much, and you will need to. Sebastian, I see you're ready for.
Yes,
thank you very much.
You guys keep up the good work, and hopefully some of the things we've gone through have sort of stuck. Hopefully I'll see some of you again at some point. And come work for Every or for Accenture. We both have. Always when you see a list of criteria on a employment things, those are not criteria, those are
wish list,
a wish list or a something. So even though you don't fill them